Okay, first I just want to thank my husband Yosef for helping arrange this year and everything for tonight. And we're going to get to the interesting title as the year goes along, if you were wondering. But I want to start out with a piece from Rav Hirsch, this verse number one. He has a few different pieces about Kislev and Hanukkah, and in one of them he starts out by just laying out an idea that is pretty common, the difference between the ideology of like Hellenism and the Yevanim and the Jewish people, where the Yevanim represent, you know, they're interested in external beauty and philosophy and all these like noble sounding interests and studies, and the Jewish people are all about Ruchnius and Torah and connection to Hashem. But and a lot of times when people talk about the two different areas of life, people say, you know, well, we're not like the Yevanim, and we focus on Torah and Ruchnius, and that's what's important, and that's what we celebrate on Hanukkah, the mitzvahs, and, you know, they want to get rid of our mitzvahs, et cetera, et cetera. But Rav Hirsch points out that even though we're focusing more on the mitzvahs, which is what the Greeks, the opposite of what the Greeks were into, at the same time, we still have to appreciate what the Greeks gave to the world, and this, what the Greeks were all about also. He says, should we not rejoice in the fulfillment of the ancient prophecy, Yasha Hashem Liyafet? God will open the mind of Yafet. Should we not rejoice in the power displayed by this Hellenistic culture, which has gained increasingly control over the minds of man by suppressing all that is vulgar and by stimulating the enjoyment of beauty? He's saying the Yavan is a Yavan the person was a descendant of Yafet, Noach's son, and Yavan the country, the people came from Yavan the person, and we see there's a similar ideology in Yavan that originated from his forefather Yafet, where Yafet got this bracha. It says, Hashem says, you know, because he helped out Shem to cover up his father, Noach, Yafet Elokim Liyafet Yishkon Baalei Shem, that Yafet gets a special bracha from Hashem, and Rav Hirsch translates it, Hashem will open the mind of Yafet. But Yafet is also from the word Yafet. It's related to all these ideas of beauty, and we see that playing out in the culture of Yavan. And he says that there's something to this idea of Yafet and beauty, because that got rid of a much more vulgar culture in society, in the paganism, that that once you have Greece, even though, okay, they have their gods and their myths and everything, but they're, you know, they're focusing on really important things. They're expanding their minds and studying philosophy and, you know, focusing on architecture and all different things that we have to value that they gave to humanity. And he says a little later, the Hellenistic spirit appeals to the godly spark in the human breast and encourages the human mind to perfect his self-perception, the recognition of the greatness of intellectual pursuit and science, and guarantees man's spirit of individual freedom. And even, not only is it a nice idea, but it even appeals to the godliness of us, because Hashem's the one who made all this beauty in the world, and Hashem is the one who created a power of appreciating aesthetics and science and ideas and gave us a rational mind that the Greeks used. So we really have to appreciate that their value as something that's from Hashem. And just the last part here, as long as Hellenism is not coupled with the spirit of shame, though, as long as it prides itself on being the sole road to happiness, it falls prey to error and division, degeneration and decay. So the only thing is, if you're going to say Greece and Yavan gave us important values and say that's good, you still have to keep a Jewish perspective and say, what does the pasuk say? V'yishkon ba'alei shem. That Hashem gave Yafet a koach in the world, but it's only worth something, and we should only take it in if it's ba'alei shem, under the umbrella and the perspective of the Jewish people of connecting to Hashem and using it for the proper things. And I was just thinking that it's interesting that out of all the different holidays in the year, it's interesting that Hanukkah has the ideas of beauty kind of right there for us. It's very prevalent in the holiday. You know, okay, so because we have an Esrog, is Kriyat Hadar, but you don't really find Hidr Mitzvah as like part of a holiday in the other holidays. But Hanukkah, we have Mahajim and Mahajin, and we light one more candle every single night, and you can light with oil, you can light in a silver menorah, whatever, all different ways to beautify the holiday that are mentioned in, you know, Sifrei Halacha. And so I just thought it was interesting that, like, this idea that we get from Hanukkah, that we have to sort of glean out from the Yevanim right away, at the same time as we're remembering that conflict of ideas, we're using the ideas of the Yevanim for mitzvahs on Hanukkah itself. And then if you just skip ahead a little bit, in the another side, in the Haftorah from the first Shabbos Hanukkah, in Zechariah, on the last line of the first paragraph, one of the messages of the Haftorah also is, Lo b'chayil v'lo b'koach, ki'im beruchi, amar Hashem tzvakot. So again, also the Haftorah reminds us that same idea of, it's not all about the strength and all about the physical abilities, but beruchi, of course Judaism values the ruchnius and, you know, connecting to Hashem, the higher things like that. And so we see we can use the physicality towards that also. Rav Shor, in his sefer Halakha Chavalibov, the second source, he kind of adds another piece to that idea. And he says not only does, or I'm saying not only because I'm connecting to her first, but not only is the idea of Hidur inherent in the Yevanim and inherent in our celebration of Hanukkah, but he says Hidur was also present in the experience of the Chashmonaim themselves in the original story of Hanukkah. He says, Yadua ke Chashmonaim asu pe'ulah shel Hidur mitzvah v'dlakatam era menorah ki me'ikar hadin hayu peturim. He says there's a whole halachic discussion that really the Chashmonaim didn't have to go to such great efforts to get the purest oil they could get. Maybe they were putter already from lighting the menorah because it was an ones situation where there just wasn't anything around, so they couldn't be held at fault to go to the ends of the earth to get this oil. It wasn't available, or maybe they were really allowed to use some oil. It's a whole discussion. But he says, therefore, they were really putter, and the fact that they went to efforts to light the menorah and get pure oil to light it, that was a hidur mitzvah in and of itself. And he goes on, and he says, Yadua lanu kishorish inyan milchamet hayavanim im kla Yisrael, who befarshat hitzav kut Yaakov im sarasol Esav. Kashir gilu lanu b'sifrei kodesh, ki ba'ech ne'amar v'atakak kaf yarach Yaakov hayapagam b'midat hod, v'hu ma'ase avot siman l'banim l'fagam shel hayavanim b'hod, zeh b'et ha'migdash, v'yom tov shuchanaka hu atikun b'midat zu. So he says that this idea of hidur mitzvah is also represented by a certain aspect of Hashem, a certain sphere of Hashem in Hasidic Kabbalistic ideas, that hod is an aspect of Hashem that means splendor, represents that idea of beauty in a spiritual kind of way. And hod is parallel. There's a system in that where each of the spheros of the aspects of Hashem is parallel to a different part of the body. And it happens to be that hod is parallel or symbolized by the left thigh or the left leg. And he says, you see this whole idea of Hod and also the Beis HaMikdash and Chanukah hinted at in the story of Yaakov and Esav, where Yaakov's fighting the Sarashal Esav right a few weeks ago in Vayishlach. And what happens? Yaakov gets injured in his thigh, in his left thigh, he says. And what happened? He was really injured. There was a pagam there. And that's why we don't need to get anasha. And that was kind of like foreshadowing Masa Avo Sima Levan and what was going to happen to the descendants of Yaakov, where the descendants of Yaakov are Am Yisrael. And Esav, even though, you know, genealogically he's a different family tree than Yavan, but in terms of, you know, ideas or spiritual kochot, Esav kind of had some things in common with Yavan. We're going to see that in the next source, not on the paper, but the next idea. And he says that just like there was a pagam in Yaakov's left leg, which symbolizes hod or beauty, so also during the time of the Yevanim used this idea of hod or hadar or beauty and to mess up the Jewish people, to go against us. And what happens? Hanukkah is what's mitaking that problem. And, you know, maybe, I don't know if he's alluding to anything else, if there was a pagam in the Jewish people themselves, there were a lot of mityavnim, people were getting attracted to this culture of beauty and focus on the externals. And he said when the Chashmonaim came and they did an act of hidur for mitzvahs, for the Beis HaMikdash, for Hashem, that was mitaking the problem that people were seeing it just for the surface of it. And he says there's the Beis HaMikdash is also a symbol of hod. It was the most splendorous, you know, thing that we had in the Jewish people. And here they were fixing up the Beis HaMikdash to make it beautiful. And that's kind of what Hanukkah is all about. I thought it was interesting, the Kli Yakar on Parshas Vayishlach, on the whole story of the fight, you know, Vayivater Yaakov Levado story, the Kli Yakar actually talks about it, and it's very similar and connected to what Rav Shor is saying, even though he doesn't mention Hanukkah at all. The Kli Yakar, it's a bit too long to put in the source sheet, but he goes through the story, and he explains it in a really interesting way. First of all, he says it happened at night. What is night? Night is the time of Mazikim. It's the time it's dark, it's confusing, there's danger for falling physically or spiritually in different ways. And in a spiritual way, when Yaakov was in this time of confusion, what did he do? Right before the part where Yaakov's left by himself and he fights this mysterious angel, is the part where he crossed the river, and Rashi says, the famous Rashi, that what happened, he forgot some Pachim Ketanim. And people relate to that to Hanukkah also, Pachim, But Rashi says that's a mizah of tzaddikim, because tzaddikim care about their possessions and people talk about it, you know, it's from Hashem, Sameach b'chalko, whatever you want to say, that's a positive thing. The Kli Yakar says it was a negative thing. He says, hold on one second. Here's Yaakov. His family's about to be ambushed by his brother who wants to kill them all, and he's leaving everybody to go get a few little jars that he left across the river. Like, what is he doing? Why is he caring about his money so much that he's leaving his whole family in danger and just to get these little things? Who cares? So you forgot your alarm clock at home. You're going to go all the way back on the plane, on the train. You know, like, what is he doing here? And the Kli Yakar says it was a time of confusion. Everyone has a spiritual downfall, even the Avos, he says, from understanding from his parish. And when that happened, Vayivatar Yaakov Levado, he was by himself. How? Because he was on a level that was all by himself. He was so low where no rational person would be. No rational person will leave his family at a time like this to get a few little things. And so he was all by himself on a Rukhni level. And so what happened? So he opens up the door to the Yetzirah when that happened. He says, Vayivatar Yaakov Levado Vayavik Ishimo. That's when the angel came to fight him. And who's the angel? The angel is the Tzar Shel Esav, which he says is synonymous with Yetzirah, with the Malchut Mavet, and it's this negative power that he let into himself. He says elsewhere the Yetzirah is compared to a fly, because if a fly doesn't really bother anybody if they're healthy and they're fine, but if a person has an open wound and the fly like smells the blood, you know, I don't know the biology of it, but the flies only come when there's already a wound open, when there's already like a carcass or something. And it's when a person opens himself up or herself up to the Yetzirah, then the Yetzirah can come in, and that's when it starts to get a person, to bring them down even lower. And that's what happened with the Tzar Shel Esav, where the Tzar Shel Esav, he says, not only was he getting at Yaakov for his skewed priorities of, you know, valuing his money over his family and safety, but the Tzar Shel Esav was even trying to get him to deny Hashem himself. Yaakov Avinu deny Hashem, like, how is it possible? But no, the Kli Yakar says that's what happens. Yaakov started getting himself into a low place, and the Yetzirah came trying to destroy it all. So what happens? So what happens next? First he points out, he says, the name of Tzar Shel Esav, I heard somewhere that you're not supposed to say the name, I don't know why, but it's spelled Samech Mem Aleph Lamed, and it's related to the word Suma, or blind. And the Kli Yakar says, because this angel of Yaakov, why does it have that name, of Esav, sorry, why does it have that name? Because what it does is it blinds a person's sight and vision from emes, from ruchnius, and it makes the person only see what's not important. And we see here, Yaakov already had wrong priorities. He was already looking at the wrong thing, at the gashmius of his possessions, for whatever reason, which Kli Yakar doesn't explain. And the Tzar Shel Esav said, aha, that's my in. He's looking at the wrong thing. I'm going to keep him looking at the wrong thing, and he's going to look so far away that he'll even deny Hashem. And he fought with him, and it was a struggle, for real. Like, we don't think, you know, sometimes there's different approaches to the Avos, if they were perfect or if they made mistakes, but Yaakov had a really big struggle here, and he quotes a Gemara that says that the Avok from this fight, like the dust of it, rose up to the Kiyasi HaKavod. There was something like a biblical proportion, you know, like huge deal about this struggle that he was having. He was so low. And so then he points out one other interesting thing, the name of the angel of Esav, Samech Mem Aleph Lamed. He says there's one of the numerical systems in Hebrew is if you look at the next letter of the alphabet of every letter of a word. So what happens if you look at Samech Mem Aleph Lamed, the next letter of each letter in the alphabet? What would you get? Anavim. It's chaser minus the yud, but Anavim, grapes. Why do you get grapes? What's the relationship? Grapes give wine. And just like in the physical world, he says, just like wine blinds a person's vision, whether physically they're stumbling around, they don't have the same clarity of mind, you know, mentally, whatever it is, just like wine physically blinds a person, so Tzar Shel Esav, the Yetzirah, spiritually blinds a person. And so that's this problem, this struggle that Yaakov was having. So what happened? He says, it was so bad. It's crazy to think about this. It was so bad, he says, Yaakov could not get himself out of the struggle. How did he get out of it? He didn't get out of it. He says Hashem had to send him a salvation from this. How do we see that? He says, what's the next thing that happened? How long did they fight? Ad alot hashachar, until dawn. What is ad alot hashachar? According to Kli Yakar, he quotes a Gemara that uses the symbol of the sun. And he says the sun is a symbol of clarity. Just like at night, you know, Lahagin Babukar Chasdecha, we talk about, like, it's clear to us in the daytime. It's light out. We have clarity. It represents clarity of mind and of spiritual vision also. And when the dawn came, suddenly everything cleared up for Yaakov. And you know, the sun is Hashem's powerful creation in the sky. We say it in Birchot Shema. It's, you know, it's this powerful thing. And if a person's not completely corrupt by the view of the Yetzer Hara, then at least somewhere in their psyche, of course, Yaakov had this somewhere in him that, oh, the sun's coming up. Oh, you know, like, oh, Hashem is the creator of the world. Look at this beautiful day. Or even if it's just symbolic of the clarity of mind that he had, that it was something that Hashem sent him to get him out of this. And it's interesting, if you look at Source 3, there's a Gemara in Yuma that also uses the symbol of the sun. And again, we see it relating to Sarsal Esav and to the Yevanim in the Hanukkah story. Tana Rabbanan, Ilmalei Gal Galchama, Nishma Kol Hamona Shel Romi. Ilmalei Kol Hamona Shel Romi, Nishma Kol Gal Galchama. So he says, if there was no, if a person didn't have the sun, if they didn't hear the sun, whatever that means, like if they didn't catch the message of the sun, perhaps, then all they would hear is the voice, the uproar of Rome, the sound of Rome uproaring. And if you didn't hear the sound of Rome, then you would hear the sound of the sun. And what does that mean? What's the message? What's the sound of the sun, the sound of Rome? The sun, we say, as the Kli Yakar says, is the message of Hashem, of clarity, of Hashem being the Ribon of the Olam. And what's the message of Rome? It's the same thing as the message of Greece, the message of the Yevanim. Rome is the descendants also, the cultural and, you know, ideological descendants of Yavan. And what Yavan and Rome represent is that same idea of only looking at the externals, looking at physical beauty and physicality and using ideas, using the human mind, not being attached to Hashem. And so the Gemara warns us that you better be careful, because if you're looking at one, you're not really going to remember to look at the other so much. You have to really keep your eye on the ball and remember that what's the point of everything, in order to not get thrown off by the other things. Of course, physicality is all over the world. We're not going to get rid of it. The reverse tells us, you know, that's a value that we should appreciate. But if we only focus on, if we only listen to the sounds of Romi, then we might just miss that sound of the Chama, that message of Hashem. And just to continue, the end of, what's the end of the story of, with Yaakov Avinu? So with Yaakov, at the end, he, right, the sun comes up, finish this, and then one other point by your Hirsch. The sun comes up, and then what happens? He names the place Penuel, because he saw Hashem panim al panim. Suddenly this makes sense, right? He saw Hashem panim al panim. He got it. He wasn't thrown off, ultimately, by the star Shal Esav. He didn't make him deny Hashem. He saw Hashem there. And then he's named Yisrael instead of Yaakov. He says Yaakov, the Kliyakar says, is from the lashon of Ikov, of like crookedness. He had a crooked, skewed perspective on things before. Now, Yisrael, Yashar. He has a straight Yashar perspective now in the world after that encounter. And again, it also connects with Hanukkah. Rav Hirsch says, and also that he points out, once one of the messages of Hanukkah, the Yevanim wanted us to say, they were trying to send us the message, Ein Chelek Belokai Yisrael, that he wanted to tell us that there's no Hashem altogether. It wasn't just a philosophy, it wasn't just the gymnasium, you know, and all the beauty that they were valuing. Ultimately, they wanted to try to stop getting us get us to stop doing mitzvahs. And ultimately, it was really just like the Tzar Shel Esav. They were trying to hit it all the way to the top. But of course, Baruch Hashem, we won and we were able to maintain the proper perspective. So it's just interesting. Also, Yaakov is often used as a symbol of the Golos. He's the third of the Avos. He lived in Chutz La'aretz. He had a lot of, you know, suffering in his life. And I've heard it discussed a lot of times that he's kind of a quintessential, if we need to look to any of the Avos to relate to in our day and age when we're still in Golos, he's the person to look to learn how to handle it. And so if there's one message that we get out of the story of how to handle Golos, it's to keep that idea in mind, to try not to let the Yetzer Hara in as much as possible, but obviously to remember the message of Hashem, not to get, you know, thrown off by the temptations and the physicality and all the other messages in Golos. And, you know, now it's Hanukkah is the same message. In the winter, it's dark, the long nights. It's a similar kind of idea of you know, of Golos and keeping the light of that sunshine, you know, in our perspective. Now to get to the title a little bit, before the Hanukkah bushes, just going to the dreidels for a minute. Three different ideas about the dreidel that tie into this. Also a little too long for the source sheet, all of them, but beautiful ideas. First is B'nai Sassar. B'nai Sassar, he also connects Hanukkah and this idea of Golos and Geula to the dreidel. He says, Nun Gimel Hei Shin. What does it stand for? Nid Gadol Hayasham, right? Don't ask me how it fits into Israeli dreidel. It doesn't talk about that. But Nun Gimel Hei Shin, he says, they're not just letters for the Hanukkah story, but they symbolize something about each of the four galus. How? He says, each of the four classical four galus, Babel, Parsamada, Yavan, and Edom, they were trying to destroy a certain aspect of the Jewish people. And that's what's hinted at by these letters. Babel, what's their claim to fame? Babel destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. The first ones to try to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, and they did it. And the Beis HaMikdash was the place where we gave sacrifices, karbanos of animals. And animals, he says, animals have a kind of soul called the nefesh. So the nun on the dreidel stands for the word nefesh, and reminds us of Babel, who tried to destroy the place where we gave the animals who have the nefesh. Nun. Gimel stands for guf. Paras the Madai, the Purim story, they wanted to destroy our guf. They wanted to kill us physically, kill out the Jewish people. And that's what the Gimel stands for. It reminds us of Paras the Madai. Skipping to the Shin stands for Seichel, which is the Gulf of Yavan, which is the Hanukkah story. It's like we were saying before, the Greeks use, you know, their intellect, come up with all these grand ideas, and that was the temptation and the challenge of the Gulf of Yavan, was the Seichel, the Shin. And then what's Hey? Hey is Hakolel. There's a Hasidic idea, a Kabbalistic idea of Hakolel, that like there's an aspect that kind of is all-encompassing. And Edom, he says, is all-encompassing to these three ideas, that they were trying to destroy all these things in the Jewish people. They also destroyed the Beis HaMikdash for Nefesh with Karbanos. They also tried to destroy our guf throughout the ages, the Crusades, and all the, you know, fights, the ideological descendants of Edom, the Romans, you know, also, of course. And the idea of Seichel, we see especially in the modern day with the Enlightenment, and, you know, they also had all these ideas, Edom and Christians and secular world that gets its culture from Edom. They were trying to fight against our Seichel and are trying to fight against our Seichel. And these are the four kochos and the four powers that have kind of held us in during the Gullus. So what happens? What happens in the dreidel, he says? He says the dreidel also has a handle. And the handle is only one. The handle reminds of Hashem. Because Hashem is above, and Hashem is the one who's in charge, who's controlling this whole crazy deal of the Gullios and all these powers against us. Hashem is the one in charge, and Hashem is the one we have to remember. And he says the only reason, and on the bottom, he says, there's one point also, and that represents the Jewish people, because the Jewish people are also one, and we keep our eyes on the one above. And so all those four nations, even though they're against us, the only reason they're able to remain standing is because of the values of the Jewish people, which are eternal. And he says something interesting. He says, Nun Gimel Hei Shin, if you take the gematria of those four letters, it equals Mashiach. And again, we see this message of Geula here hidden in the dreidel, where even when we're stuck in that muck of the Gullus and we have all these forces against us and all the, you know, problems that they're giving to us, we have to keep our eye on the ball. Remember the Hashem, the one handle above, and remember the Mashiach that it's all going to lead to. And he says, the gematria of Nun Gimel Hei Shin of Mashiach also equals Hashem Melech, Hashem Malach, Hashem Yimloch. The one Hashem, you can work it out later if you want, that Hashem is the one who's in charge. We have to keep our eye and remember that Hashem is the one ultimately who's in charge. Again, also, if you rearrange the letters, Nun Gimel Hei Shin, it also spells out a word. It spells out Goshna. Also in the upcoming parashios, in source number 4 from the Yigash, where does Goshna come up? That Yehuda shalach lefanav el Yosef lehor lefanav Goshna v'yavo arta Goshen. That when, you know, the whole family was getting together, and what happened? Yehuda was sent in front of everybody else to set up Goshen for the Jewish people. What's Goshen? What does Goshna tell us? So Rashi says underneath, he says the Kodesh Yagil Hashem, he went to before everybody else. He went down to Mitzrayim before all the brothers and the family went down. Yehuda went first. Why? Umidrash Agada lahorot lefanav letakein lo Beit Talmud semisham titzei horah. That before we went into Gullus, before the Gullus started happening, what do we have to do? The Jewish people had to have a Beit Talmud. They had to have a place of Torah to lead us, to guide us, so that we could manage through the Gullus, that we could remember about Hashem and not get lost and stuck in the tzaros and the hardship of Mitzrayim, that even at the very beginning of all these exiles, from the very beginning, you know, Yehuda goes down and we have to set the Torah as our focus. Idea number one about the dreidel. Idea number two about the dreidel. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov says also something interesting. He also talks about the letters Nun, Gimel, Hei, and Shin, and he starts out by talking about he talks about how he doesn't think people should study philosophy, it's terrible, whatever, and then he uses kind of like the lashon of philosophy in what he's saying. In other words, he knew what he was talking about when he said people shouldn't study it, because he knew about the philosophy. But the point is, he talks about this idea that the world is kind of the merging of elyonim and tachtonim. He says contrary to what it might seem, it might seem the philosophers think that the heaven is, you know, far away and the earth is what we have here, but really, Torah believes the elyonim can come down to the tachtonim, and the tachtonim, this world, can be brought up to the elyonim. And we see that, for example, in the Beis HaMikdash, right, where the Shekhinah is kind of like a heavenly entity that's coming down to us. And the physical things, all the kalim, and also the physical, you know, dimensions of the Beis HaMikdash even, they didn't really work, that they were, the Beis HaMikdash really was a place where even physicality was very much in the realm of spirituality, that it didn't go by the same laws as this world, even though it was a this worldly structure. So he says that's this idea of the merging of the, you know, the upper world and the lower world. And he says this is also hinted at in the dreidel. He says not only can Nun, Gimel, Hei, Shin stand for Neis Gadol Hayah Sham, he says he uses here we get again the philosophical language, words for different types of matter. And he says there are different types of matter. There's something called Hiyuli, which is mentioned by other sources. The Ramban mentions this idea of like primordial matter that's like unformed and not shaped into anything yet. That's Hiyuli. Then if you start like in the different gradations of the existence of matter, there is there's something called Nivdal, which is a spiritual existence, you know, like an angel that's separated from this world, but it exists in a form of sorts. Then there's something called Galgal, which is a very fine kind of physical matter that is like very faint kind of. Rav Moshe Weinberger talks about Rav Moshe Weinberger, when he discusses this piece, he uses the example of an electron as a galgal. He says, like, it exists, it's physical, but there's not really anything to it. You can't, like, hold on to it with your hands. You can't see it. It's, like, kind of abstract, even though it's really there. So that's galgal. It's, like, kind of a very refined kind of physical matter. And then there's shuffle, which is just the physical stuff, you know, everything that we have around that we can feel and touch and see. So we said these are four different gradations of how physical or spiritual something is. Seem to be different categories. But these are symbolized on the dreidel. Nun, nivdal, that's the spiritual stuff, right? Gimel, galgal, that's the refined physical things like the electron. Hey is hiuli, this unformed potential for becoming something. And shin is the shuffle, is the physical thing, is, you know, the hardcore physicality in this world. And he says, what do you do with the dreidel? You spin it. And what happens when you spin it? He says, all the different categories of things, they seem so separate, the elyonim, the tachtonim, the nivdal and the shuffal, and the hiuli and the galgal, he says, but really it just blurs into each other. You spin a dreidel, it all kind of just goes around and around. One can change into the other, it can land on a gimel, it can land on a shin, and in this world, all the different kinds of matter can really just transform into each other. And it's interesting, Rav Weinberger says that nowadays, this is not really such a foreign concept to us. Everyone knows E equals MC squared, right? Matter, energy, conservation, you know, like one thing just turns into another. It's not, you know, like matter can only be matter. It can also be something a little bit different. And so similarly, that's what we learn with, you know, about spiritual things, that just like in the Beis HaMikdash, it's possible to make this physical world a spiritual world and to bring the spiritual world down to the physical world. And that's also the message of the dreidel. And he says this is also the message of Hanukkah, and this is also the Bechina, the aspect of the Beis HaMikdash, the power. He said how the Beis HaMikdash is this coming together, and he says this power is in Hanukkah also. Obviously, it's the symbol of the dreidel, and we've kind of seen that idea so far in the other sources, that it's present in Hanukkah also, of like kind of bringing the spirituality into physicality. And again, he also points it to Gula. He says, again, also, there's one handle to the dreidel. And that's what we have to keep our eye on, that we have to remember there's one Hashem who creates all this matter, who makes the potential for one to be like another. And he says also the same letters on the dreidel are the first letters in a pasuk in Tehillim. that starts, that's about Beis HaMikdash. In Tehillim Ayin Dalet, it says, Ga'al Tashevet Nachlatech Ahar Tzion Shechanta Bo, that Hashem, you know, you redeemed your people, your portion, on the Har Tzion. That's where you rested. What's the Har Tzion? Where did you rest, Hashem? In the Beis HaMikdash is what it's talking about. And Ga'al Tagimol Shevet Shin Nachlatech Nun Har Hey Har Tzion. That the Nun and Gimel, the Hey and the Shin all come together in this idea of the Beis HaMikdash, also as we see in Tehillim. That's the idea of the dreidel, idea number two. That was in Sichos Haran, in his Ot Mem, in the collection of the Rabbi Nachman's Torah. Going on, source number 6 and 7 is our third and last idea about the dreidel that relates to all these things. It's from Tami Haman Hagim, where he talks, he has, you know, a whole section on Hanukkah, and he says, Tam Shemashachakin the dreidel, the Hanukkah, Uvipurim, the Grager, the Bechanaka lo haita hit orut milmata rak mil'ela ki lo asu tshuva kohogen rak Hashem yitbarach v'rachamav. What happened? He says there's a difference between the like tool and instrument that we use on Hanukkah and the one we use on Purim. On Hanukkah we use a dreidel that has the handle on the top, and on Purim we use a grager, which has a handle on the bottom. Okay, just, you know, mechanics of tools. No, he says no. He says there's a spiritual message, because it reflects the natures of the different of the two different holidays. In the story of Purim, we see, you know, Esther's going to go to Achashverosh, the whole country, everyone's davening and sackcloth and fasting and everything, and people really did tshuva. It was his orus dilatata. It was from down here, from this world, we were awakening, we were doing tshuva and awakening the Yeshua that Hashem was going to bring. But what happened on Hanukkah? On Hanukkah, we didn't really do such good stuff, you know? Most of the people were misyavnil, like a lot of people assimilated. Okay, you have Matityahu and his sons, but that's like, what, 5 people? Like, it wasn't such a good representation. And really, most of the people were on a pretty low level. And Hashem himself had to really descend the Yeshua from above without us doing tshuva to deserve it. And that's why we spin the dreidel from above. And that's why, it, you know, the handle's on top. And there's in source 7, it's a parish on Tami Haman Hagim called Kunchas Acharon, and there he says the same idea is also reflected in the liturgy of Hanukkah and Purim. That on, what do we say, there's very similar lines in the bracha after the Megillah reading and in Al Nisim for Hanukkah. What do we say? So on Purim, we say, Haravet Rivenu, right? We say, Hashem, you fought our battle. Right, Hadanes Dinenu. You judged, you know, our matter that needed to be judged. Hanukim at Nikmatenu. That's what we say on Purim. In Hanukkah, in the Al Nisim, we say Ravta Rivam, Danta at Dinam, Nakamta Nikmatam. We say you fought their fight. You took care of their issue over here. And this Kuntras Achron says that this really reflects the idea of, was there tshuva? Was there not tshuva? Was it a chesed from Hashem? Was us deserving it or not? That Haravet Rivenu, on Purim, it was everyone, it was our fight. We were working at the fight just as much as Hashem was working at the fight. We were doing tshuva. But on Hanukkah, Ravet Rivam, Hashem, you took care of it, and we're not really using a lashon that's inclusive to ourselves. And so to appreciate the unique aspect of each holiday on Hanukkah, what we're really celebrating, that we're talking about in Tami Haman Hagim, in this parish, is really a chesed without us deserving it. And that Hashem, even when we're at low levels, and even when we don't even deserve it, just like we saw with Yaakov, when Yaakov couldn't even get himself out of the rut from Sar Shel Esav, Hashem sends the Alas HaShachar, the clarity just came, and the miracle just came. And sometimes we have to appreciate that Hashem gives us chasadim and amazing kindnesses and miracles when we don't even deserve it. And that's something to appreciate about Hanukkah. And but Eitan Feiner adds to this idea from Tami Haman Hagim, his own ideas, and he says, not only do the handles teach us this idea, but even from other aspects of the two, the dreidel and the grager, he says, the dreidel is little, what's the big deal? We didn't really do anything to deserve it. It wasn't such a big effort on our part. The grager, gragers are typically bigger than dreidel. And he says, not only that, but a grager, when it moves, it's in our own control. We take the grager when we want it to. That's what we did on Purim. On Purim, we brought the Yeshua. We did the Shuva because we wanted to. On Hanukkah, spin the dreidel, it goes flying across the table. You don't know where it's going to end up. And that's what happens on Hanukkah, where it was out of our control. The Yeshua was out of our control. Even though you have Matityahu and his sons, ultimately it was a chesed from Hashem. And there we have the third idea of the dreidel. And now to the other part of the title, right? Hanukkah bushes. What's a Hanukkah bush? Anyone ever hear of a Hanukkah bush? So yeah, So Hagabush, for anyone who doesn't know, is like one of these things when Jews started coming to America and assimilating and intermarrying. There's this idea of a Hanukkah bush. You have a Christmas tree of a Hanukkah bush. Very nice. There's this terrible website called Chrismica. But yeah, Hanukkah bushes. It's like all the mergings of like Christmas. And it's so sad. But so this idea of a Hanukkah bush. How in the world could a Hanukkah bush be a symbol of Geula, you may ask? So I thought Hanukkah bush was cuter in the title, but really it's a Hanukkah tree, which is even more similar to Christmas. But obviously they're completely, and you know, you see whatever, again, the Western culture, which is kind of also the descendants of Edom, obviously this is not exactly what we're talking about. So what are we talking about? If you turn to the other side of your source sheet, we have the Haftorah of Shabbat Chanukah this year, the first Shabbat Chanukah from Zechariah, Perek Dalet. And there's a really interesting image in the Haftorah where the vision is that there's this big gold menorah, right, with all of its branches, and each branch, which is lit, you know, with oil. How is it getting its oil? There's a tube connecting, you can, you know, read a little bit later, not to read through the whole thing now, but there's a tube attached to each branch, which is leading into a pool of oil that's like underneath. There's one on the right side and one on the left side of the menorah, and this menorah is getting constant fuel from these bowls or containers of oil underneath. And what's that symbol all about exactly? So Rav Hirsch has a really interesting analysis and understanding of the symbolism in the Haftorah. And he bases it on his general understanding of what is the symbolism of the menorah altogether. Because the menorah, he says, think about it. Imagine the picture of the menorah, right? It's got a bottom. It's got like a pedestal, like a little base on the bottom. It's got its middle piece. It's got some things hanging out of the sides, flowers, little, you know, knobs, and these cups. What does it remind him of, he says? It's like a tree. A tree has roots in the bottom, right? It's just like the bottom, the base of the menorah. A tree has a trunk. It's the middle of the menorah. A tree has branches. The menorah has branches. And what's on the branches, he says? They're flowers. Flowers are on trees. They're knobs. He says the knobs are symbols like a fruit growing. Like when a fruit starts to grow on a tree, it's like this little ball just, you know, before it really develops. It's like a little ball. That's the knobs. And he also mentions the gevim, the cups. He doesn't say exactly what that is. I don't know, maybe he meant it to be like kind of like leaves a little bit. And he says, really, that's what a menorah symbolizes altogether. Who cares that a menorah is like a tree? He says, what else is symbolized by a tree? Am Yisrael. He says, he goes through a whole bunch of different psukim, like throughout Nach, and one after another, he says, all these psukim where Am Yisrael compared to a tree or a plant in Tehillim and in Yeshayahu and in a few different places in Yeshayahu, and he says we're called, you know, there's a nevuah about Mashiach, you know, Ish Tzemach Shemo, that what's the Ish that's Mashiach is called by the name Tzemach, a plant or something that was growing, and when we came out of Mitzrayim we were referred to as a plant, and there's a nevuah of a Kerem that we're like a vineyard, and there's so many different places where we're the Jewish people are symbolized by a plant of sorts. And that's the same, but what plant are we? What kind of tree are we? We're a menorah tree. He says, that's what the menorah is. The menorah is the tree of the Jewish people. Because what kind of tree are we? We're not a physical tree. We're this thriving, living entity that has light at the top. What are our fruits? What's the crown at the top of our tree? It's the lights. It's the symbol of the lights. The symbol of the clarity of day, of the Hanukkah lights. Of the clarity that of Hashem Echad, all these things, what Yaakov realized, and you know, the Chashmonaim realized, the idea of Hashem Echad, that's what we're growing, that's why we're all about, what we're all about, what we're growing for, and ultimately that plant of the Jewish people is supposed to really blossom and sprout in the time of Mashiach, and that's like the, you know, climax of the Jewish people as a plant, and so that's also, you know, ties into the symbol of the menorah that we use on Hanukkah, reminds us of the Geula. You know, as he mentioned specifically sources that talk about the Geula as like the Tzemach of the Jewish people. And also, that's what the symbol is in the Haftorah. That the Haftorah is very specific. Okay, so now we see, you know, there's a parallel. Jewish people, menorah, Jewish people, tree, menorah. What kind of menorah do we have here in Zechariah? It's a self-sustaining menorah. It constantly gets its nourishment kind of from itself. And that's what we have to be in order to survive through this galus, Rav Hirsch says, that's what we have to do. We have to constantly have this inpouring of ruchnius, of life-sustaining of ourselves in order to make it through Gullus, through all the different, and he even connects the word Tzemach. He says, he quotes the Gemara, where it says that all the final letters of Aleph, Beit, and Menach, Pach, and you know, all the letters that are, have a different shape when they're at the end of a word, those stand for also, in different ways, the different Galuyos, and the Tzadi stands for the Atid Lavo of the Geula. And so we see also, again, at the end of Zechariah, at the end of this section, the last pasuk says, you know, Zechariah says, well, what's the symbol of the these two pools of oil? And what's the answer? Vayomer, Ela Shnei B'nei HaYitzar, HaMdim Aladon Kol Ha'aretz. Shnei B'nei HaYitzar, Rav Hirsch says, are the two anointed ones, the ones anointed with oil, which is the Mashiach and the Melech of the Jewish people. And that's also, you know, an allusion to the Geula. And so in order to, he says, in order to get through Gullus, he says, we just have to keep pumping that oil into ourselves, keep getting that ruchnius and that message of Hashem through shiurim and through davening and through giving each other chizuk. And he says something interesting. He says, in source 10, he says, unleash the tempest of destruction upon a tree. Let it split, shattered, and stripped bare of its branches. Let its leaves and blossoms be scattered on the ground far and wide, and it will appear destroyed. And he compares it earlier to an animal. You could also destroy an animal, and it'll also appear destroyed. But what happens? An animal's really destroyed if it's like pieces are thrown all over the place. What happens with the tree? But see, the scattered shoots, the fragments of buds and blossoms will germinate and grow into a trunk, and the force that sought to destroy it has only succeeded in reviving it and making it grow again, stronger than ever. As long as even one root fiber will remain healthy in the soil, then the tree may indeed die. But because of this one healthy root, it will rise again to new life. And one single healthy shoot will be sufficient to save the tree for eternity. Tzemach Shemo u'mitachtav yitzmach. It's the same pasuk of Tzemach about Mashiach. There you have Israel, and there you have the miracle of Hanukkah, that through Gullus, and Hanukkah also, just like Yaakov is the third of the Avos in this time of darkness, symbolized Gullus, so Hanukkah, chronologically, is the last of the holidays, really. It's the second base of Mikdash. There's no holidays after that. And that's what's supposed to keep us going in the Gullus, is this last holiday. And the message of the tree, of the menorah, is that a tree, you know, it's got seeds all over the place. Even if it's destroyed, the seeds scatter. Even if Am Yisrael are scattered across the whole earth in Gullus, we're going to sprout up Jewish communities here and there and everywhere, and Torah, you know, shuls and schools, and we're going to rebuild ourselves, and that's how we're going to lead to the Geula. Even if we're everywhere, if we keep our, you know, our focus in mind, we're going to get through this, and we're going to get to the Geula. And just the final source, source 11 is the B'nai Yisachar, and he says, earlier on in a different section, he says that he mentions the Or HaGanuz. The Or HaGanuz that classically, right, Hashem created light at the beginning of the world, and then Adam sins, and he put away the light for, you know, for the Tzadikim in the Zman of Mashiach. So what happens to that light exactly? Like, where did he put it? So here he says, Ha'arat HaMitzvah near Hanukkah, that the light of Hanukkah actually is a continuation of that Or HaGanuz. And he says elsewhere that the Or HaGanuz was also put into the Torah. And he says, just to continue, the bottom part, he says, Al Kain Kar'uli Amim Ha'ela Hanukkah, Shehu Chinuch V'Hergel Al La'atid Ge'ula Atida, She'az Yigalel Lanu Ha'Or HaGanuz V'Shleimut, K'she'amru Chazal V'Ganzula Tadikim Lati Lavo. That why does Hanukkah have the name Hanukkah? Hanukkah is from the word chanuch, to educate. On Hanukkah, we're educating ourselves, we're reminding ourselves, we're practicing for the time of the Geula. We're grasping that light that was set aside for Geula, but it's hidden in the Torah, and we're unleashing it. We're lighting the menorah. We're reminding ourselves of the tree, of the Jewish people, of what we have to do in this world, and that is going to be able to help us get to the Geula, and that's going to unleash the Or HaGanuz in its shleimus. And Yirat Hashem, Hashem should allow us to, you know, to continue remembering that message and get us through these galuyos and get to Zman HaMashiach. May Rav Aminu.